He is exactly like our own fat, freckled cocker spaniel who was gloriously won in a raffle by the father in our family. The house, which is called the four-story mistake, is made out of several queer old interesting houses that I have seen, and is set in the kind of country which I have enjoyed the most, country with plenty of woods, hills, streams, and valleys. Wishing has played a large part in these stories, too, as you can see. The Melendis have and do all the things I would have liked to have and do as a child. There are plenty of them, for one thing, and I was an only child. They live in the country all year round, for another, and I lived in the city for most of it. They discovered a secret room, built a tree house, found a diamond, escaped from dangers, effected rescues, gave elaborate theatrical performances at the drop of a hat, got lost, and did many other striking things, all of which I would have liked to do. So the Melendis, you see, are a mixture. They are made out of wishes and memory and fancy. This, I am sure, is what all the characters in books are made of. Yet, while I was writing about these children, they often seemed to me like people that I knew. And when you are reading the stories of their trials and adventures, I hope that you, too, will sometimes feel that they are real. Elizabeth Enright, 1947. Chapter 1. The Last Time and the First. "Well, thank goodness there aren't going to be any more children here, anyway," said Randy crossly. She spoke crossly because she was sad, and she preferred sounding cross to sounding sorrowful, even though there was no one in the room except herself. Nobody and nothing, for that matter. Her words had the particular ringing echo that is heard only in entirely empty rooms. Almost all her life Randy had shared this room with her older sister Mona, and today they were going to go away and leave it, forever. She looked carefully around, because it is important to see clearly when one looks at something for the last time. How strange it seemed with all the furniture gone, smaller somehow. In the long window the scarred shade hung crookedly, as it always had. For hundreds and hundreds of nights its gentle flapping had been the last sound she heard before she slept. "Goodbye, shade," thought Randy sentimentally. Above the place where her bed had been, some of her own drawings remained, because she had impulsively stuck them into the wallpaper with glue when she couldn't find the thumbtacks. Cuffy had given her a good scolding for that, all right. "Goodbye, pictures," thought Randy. She didn't mind leaving the pictures so much. She could make thousands of better ones any time she felt like it. She looked at the darker rectangles on the paper where other pictures had hung, and the stain on the baseboard where Mona had spilled the iodine that time. Randy sighed a loud, echoing sigh. Downstairs in Rush's room she could hear the voices of Rush and Mona, and a lot of scraping and thumping and banging as they tried to get a suitcase closed. "Doggone thing acts like it hates me," she heard Rush complain bitterly. "Be reasonable," said Mona, in her most maddening voice. "You can't expect anything to absorb 7 times its own capacity. Why don't you take something out?" "I suppose I could carry the 9th Symphony, and the B minor concerto, and the roller skates myself. They don't seem to give much." Randy sighed again, and went out of the room for the last time. The last time. She'd been saying that to herself all day. She had paid a farewell visit to every single room in the house, from the office, which had been the Melendi children's playroom, to the furnace room in the basement. All of them looked bare and cold and friendless. That morning the moving men had swarmed through the place, rolling up carpets, packing barrels, lumbering up and down the stairs with couches and chests of drawers on their backs like mammoth snails. Everything about the moving men was huge, their big striped aprons, their swelling necks and biceps, and their voices, especially their voices. They had bawled at each other like giants shouting from mountaintops. "Give us a hand with the piano, Al," or "Careful of that corner, Joe. Don't knock them casters off." But now they had gone, and all the furniture with them, swallowed up in 2 vans the size of 2 Noah's Arks, and the house was an echoing shell, bereft and desolate. Soon the painters and plasterers and carpenters would come into the house. They would patch up the ceiling, bolster up the sagging staircase, paint and polish and mend till every sign of the Melendis was gone. The iodine stain on the baseboard, Randy's pictures, plasticine marks on the office ceiling, the height-measuring marks of each Melendi child on the upstairs bathroom door, and all the dozens of other souvenirs left by four busy children in a home. The new people who had bought the house were old, a doctor and his wife. They were rich, too. How quiet the place would be under its new pelt of thick carpet. Old feet would go slowly up and down the stairs. Doors would never slam. Meals would be served on time by noiseless servants. "Poor house," said Randy. For a minute she almost hated Father for selling their nice home without a word and buying a new one in the country that nobody but he and Cuffy had even seen. "Randy!" bellowed Rush from downstairs. "Come sit on my suitcase with Mona and me. The darn thing won't close." Randy went down the stairs slowly, her hand trailing on the banister. "Goodbye, stairs," she was thinking. "Goodbye, banister. Fat Oliver won't be here any more to go sliding down you with his breeches whistling and his shoes rattling against the spokes. I bet that old doctor and his old wife never slid down a banister in their lives." "Take your time, Madam Queen. We're young. We've got all our lives to wait," said Rush, as Randy drifted mournfully into the room. His battle with the suitcase had made him cross. Or was it something else? None of them wanted to leave their house. None of them, that is, except 7-year-old Oliver, who always greeted the future as a friend and never gave a hang about anything in the past. Oliver had said, "Oh, boy! A house in the country? Can I have a horse and a pig and a swing and a 2-wheel bicycle?" Rush's suitcase stood in the middle of his dismantled room, along with another suitcase, two books of music scores, and the dog Isaac's carrier. Its jaws were wide open, disclosing an undigested meal of socks, underwear, field glasses, baseball mitts, sweaters, model airplanes, and books. Mona was kneeling beside it, her fair hair tousled and her cheeks crimson with exertion. "That suitcase looks as if it were laughing out loud," Randy said. "Oh, stop being whimsical," snapped Rush. "Come on and sit on it." So they all sat down and made their sitting as heavy as they could, and Rush struggled with the clasps, which still wouldn't quite close. "You'll just have to take out something else," sighed Mona. "No, I won't." Rush stood up angrily. "I'm not going to be conquered by a third-rate piece of luggage. I'll get Cuffy. Why didn't I think of it before?" And he leaned over the banister and shouted for Cuffy, who was the Melendi housekeeper, nurse, cook, advisor, and dear friend. She was the sort of person who could have been set down in the middle of the Gobi Desert and still contrived to make a home-like atmosphere about her. "All right, all right," answered her voice from downstairs in the kitchen. "I'm just getting Oliver's face washed. I'll be up in a minute." Rush came back into the room and stood silent at the window looking down into the street below. Randy and Mona sat side by side on the suitcase and looked at the bare floor. Nobody said anything. Randy could feel the house around her and how tall and deep and still it was. She could feel the emptiness of every room like an ache in her bones. Tonight, when they were gone, there would be nothing left in the house. The old boards would stretch and creak a little. The office mouse would come out of his hiding place fearlessly, and lights from cars passing in the street would move across the ceilings of deserted rooms. "I don't want to go away," Randy burst out rebelliously. "I'll never like any house as much as this one. I don't care if it has a real swimming pool and gold doorknobs." "Oh, quit it, Randy." Rush turned from his window. "None of us want to move, but we have to." Mona put her arm around Randy's shoulders. "I know how you feel," she said, "but maybe we'll like this new place, too." "I won't," declared Randy, closing her eyes and holding her breath so that the tears would go back where they belonged and not pour out and disgrace her. Cuffy came creaking up the stairs, and Oliver...